Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
And I am looking at Adam while doing Ben Harrison.
Really popping a lot of cherries today, Ben. First and foremost, you popped my Langer's cherry.
Yeah.
Ooh, I am too full for pod.
Yeah, we are here at the world headquarters of MaximumFun.org, overlooking MacArthur Park.
A place chosen for its proximity to Langer's, I learned.
Yeah, Langer's, of course, is a delicatessen that serves improbably large meat sandwiches. And
by improbably kind waitstaff. Really nice.
Yeah, a lot of getting called hun.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you got the classic. Your bill was $48 million and not $48.
Oh yeah, I love that bit. So fun.
That bit, it's old as time, but it's real charming when it's a nice old lady doing it, right?
Yeah, yeah. If it was just some ding dong at a convenience store counter,
no,
that's not fun at all.
No, thank you.
But when you're full of pastrami,
yeah. Mm. So we're here in Los Angeles, California. We stayed up late last night and watched the episode we're here to review today on the couches in my wife's family's house.
The best place to do something embarrassing is on the couch of your mother-in-law's home, right?
Yeah. It's been a long time. Like, I feel like we really made a lot of hay out of the fact that that we did that last time. And this time, nobody was around, so it felt a lot more covert. You know,
yeah.
I didn't have to ask to be excused to go watch Star Trek.
No.
But, yeah, it's...
I still feel very apologetic for the show's involvement in their life at any level, though.
Yeah, it is a hard thing to look your mother-in-law in the eye and admit that you're doing.
She had so much higher hopes for her only daughter.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, the pastrami is settling in our stomachs, dumbing us up.
I really feel bad for you, Ben. We're in a locked, soundproof booth after just having had giant pastrami sandwiches. Anything could happen. The ventilation system's been shut off. The door locks from the outside.
Yeah.
Are you ready to do some pod?
Maybe this room might be the most appropriate possible place to do this episode from, because it does feel like a place you'd get thrown if you were a danger to yourself and others.
Yeah, I expected, like, this is Maximum Fun's HR department in this room, right? This is where you're counseled sternly.
Yeah. So should we get into it, Adam?
Yeah, let's do that. Real happy episode for you today. Season 6, episode 21, Frame of Mind.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
So this one starts with a long take, and you can tell that things are tense right off the bat based on Riker's hair.
Typically, I am against the experience of watching the crew have hobbies outside of Star Trek, you know, outside of their job of Star Trek.
Right.
And this sets the tone right away.
So the Doctor is probably your least favorite character because she seems to have the most extracurricular shit on her plate of anybody.
Yeah.
Breakfast with the captain, teaching drama.
I thought people in the medical community always had the longest hours. They're the ones sleeping at work.
Maybe that's all changed here in the future.
A perfect medical future.
Well, it's a long take, and it kind of starts, it puts you off balance to begin with because you hear a voice coming from off screen, but it's not immediately clear who it is. And Riker is interacting with this person and in a way that quickly reveals itself to be like he doesn't quite have his wits about him. He's kind of contradicting himself and losing track of the reality he is trying to build with the person he is talking to.
And Riker can be hair askew and wall-eyed occasionally, so it's not entirely out of character for him.
Yeah, it might have just been a long night in Holodeck 4 for him.
Commander Riker in Long Night on Risa.
Yeah, I heard Long Night on Risa 2 makes Long Night on Risa look like Long Night on Risa 3. He's trying to
two tapes on that one.
Yeah. There's an intermission.
Yeah.
For the squeegee crew to come into the theater.
Gross.
The thing here is he's trying to talk his interlocutor out of the idea that he's a crazy criminal person, right? He's like,
I'm looking forward to proving my innocence.
Making the argument that he wasn't in his right mind, but he's willing to stand trial, but he didn't do it, but he's sorry, but let me go because I'm much better now.
Sure, and the person that he's talking to is like verbally trapping him.
I thought you said you accepted what you did.
After everything he says, he's really getting boxed in.
That's really not what you want in your therapist. laying little rhetorical traps for you.
How many appointments do you go to that go like that before you start auditioning others?
Yeah. It's like, Ted Cruz, I don't think I want you to be my therapist anymore. This doesn't seem like a healthy doctor-patient relationship.
Pay him in soup, though.
So, yeah, I mean, and then the reveal is that he's been, that he's like, I guess he's like trying to remember one of the lines and that the camera cuts and Beverly is there.
Why don't we take a break for tonight?
The interlocutor is Data and they've been practicing for a play and Riker goes so far as to say he doesn't feel like he's right for the part.
I feel like he did great.
Yeah.
He went on like a 4-page monologue and only slipped up at the very end.
Yeah. I might even say that this scene is Frakes' best scene in the episode.
Well, I think that's fair.
It's a weird episode because it really like oscillates between moments of like triumph and achievement and a couple of just like clunky ass things that happened that are just like, ugh. This could have been a mountain if they hadn't stepped on a couple of pieces of poopy.
The premise of the ep makes me think if the story began from the perspective of wanting to give actors something different to do than they normally get, if that's where you begin with breaking a story like this, instead of what it probably was, which was like, what if Riker's crazy? What if he thinks he's crazy? What if he's a prisoner of war? Like, I wonder how much story breaking comes from like the idea of boredom for a group of actors.
Yeah.
And if that's where this came from.
Like at the table read, they're all just like checking their watches and just like, oh my God, another goddamn space-time rift? Are you fucking kidding me?
Being Riker sucks.
Yeah. Have we had like a good Riker episode yet this season?
Yeah, it feels like it's been a while maybe.
Well, anyways, Crusher kind of calms him down, says that it's possible to over-rehearse, which is maybe not the right thing to say to somebody who's still not off book.
If there's anyone you want to act across, you want it to be Data, right?
Yeah.
I bet he could whisper lines to you the entire time without his lips moving.
Yeah, he could throw his voice and like you're the only person in the room that can hear it.
Really safe place to act, I think.
Yeah. But he gets calmed down and he's heading home and he's walking in the hallway like rehearsing his various lines and comes across a man with very suspicious loaf.
This guy has women's suffrage bonnet loaf.
Yeah. It's like that iconic tunnel in Marin where there's two side by side.
Yeah.
but then his hair also is that shape.
It's real split top butter loaf too, you know?
Yeah. That like just seeing this guy is enough for Riker eyes to theme song.
I don't get the sense that the entrepreneur is a very social place because the thing that makes this guy stand out is that he's looking at Riker as he walks by.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the Enterprise is a real Seattle chill type place where you walk by someone and you're not supposed to look or say what's up.
Yeah.
That guy's problem? He's really familiar.
Yeah. Blowing up this spot. He must have forgot.
Mind your own business.
Something great about Seattle is that Seattle chill, because most of the time I don't want to interact with anybody, so it's great. But if I ever want to immediately alienate somebody, I can, and it will work.
It's within your power.
Yeah. Anybody walking down the street, you give a how do you do, and they're like running for the hills.
Yeah, we don't like that. That's what makes recording in the same booth as you so uncomfortable for me.
Yeah, you're steeped in that culture.
Yeah.
We have basically the same thing in New York. Like, you don't really strike up a conversation with somebody.
It's like Jay-Z says, concrete bunghole where dreams are made up. There's nothing you can do.
I was visiting some cousins in Vermont, and like, I was going to help my uncle fix up something on his house, so he had to go to the hardware store and just didn't know the hardware store guy from anybody else. That they passed the time for like an hour and a half, and I wanted to crawl out of my skin. I was like, what could we possibly have to say to this rube?
Looks like you're here to dig a grave. Shovels are on aisle two.
Now, the OSHA-approved shovel has a fiberglass handle so that if you hit a power line, it doesn't shock you.
Are you trying to this old Pet Sematary me? The mashup no one asked for?
Yeah. Well, let's move on. I don't know. Like, Riker's got to be on top of everybody on the ship, right? Like, seeing a strange lieutenant with weird loaf, he should know who that is, right?
It seems like there should be sort of a pyramid of rank on the ship, and there can't be that many lieutenants on board. And if he's in command of the roster, he's got to know everyone. This guy's a little shifty, though.
The order of business for Riker is that he's getting briefed by Captain Picard on, like, a covert mission he's going to have to do on this planet. Do we have a name on this planet?
Talonis 4.
The fucking stupid page of notes that we have open doesn't say what the planet is, so we'll never know, Adam.
Does it really matter?
No. But anyways, this planet, there's like a breakdown in the social order. There's a Federation team that is missing, and they don't want to interface with any local authorities because they're all, you know, warlord-type situations. And importantly, Picard tells Riker that they have resorted to torture to get what they want. They're all vying for power, and they're concerned that these Federation hostages are getting tortured.
The last time Riker had to go behind enemy lines and dress as if, he had to fuck his way out of that hospital, remember?
That's true. Riker's like, man, I got to pack a bag in both sets of quarters.
You remember that from the hit film Hard Night on Risa, Volume 4.
Oh, man.
There's a really fun James Bond-esque scene in this episode where Worf sort of plays the part of guy with inventions.
This apparel will help you pass as a common merchant.
Showing them to a 007 Riker who gets to like sort of try them out at the desk.
Yeah.
Really fun.
He gets the communicator that's on a gold chain. He gets a watch that sprays hot sauce in case they want him to eat something with mayonnaise in it.
Yeah. He's got that car that throws up the smoke screen to people behind him.
Yeah. Worf is being kind of a mother hen, too. He's, like, really worried about Riker.
I suggest you pay closer attention, Commander. Your life will be at stake.
You know, Riker's not necessarily taking the danger of this as seriously as Worf would like.
Well, you forget that Worf and Riker are best friends because they stopped supporting that character development, like, 3 seasons ago.
Yeah, they wrote it in once and then forgot about it.
Yeah. There was that eggs incident that they never recovered from.
I feel like Michael Dorn didn't forget that Worf and Riker are best friends. Maybe Frakes did. Yeah. The writing staff definitely did.
Yeah.
But Worf is like, hey, but the best part about this mission is this knife. And he's got this crazy, snaky blade that apparently you need to dance around with in order to close a business deal on this planet. There's like a knife ceremony for every purchase or transaction that you make. And Worf is demonstrating it a little bit. And it, you know, looks suspiciously like Klingon yoga. But he doesn't have quite as much control over that as he, over this as he does that. So he nicks Riker on the side of the head.
That Foley sound of knife on face was unmistakably cringy.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I'm sorry, Commander.
He looks at Worf appropriately pissed. It's like, what the hell are you doing, man?
What the fuck is wrong with you?
There's no way this alien loaf is going to stick if my head's bleeding.
Is the idea that he's going to go down beloafed?
It sure seems that way. That's the only way to blend in.
Yeah. The doc patches him back up, and it's kind of like, they're like talking play while she's patching him up, right? He's like, he's still got nerves about this situation.
He's like, oh, I guess I can get out of the play portion of my life. This is a great excuse.
He's basically trying everything he can try with the doc and eventually consents to continue with the play.
When you hire Commander Riker as an actor in your troupe, consent also applies to which part to give him.
Well, and consent can be withdrawn at any time.
It's
for
true.
Any reason.
Yeah.
You know?
A ticket is no guarantee of a riot, Ben.
He does his play and, like, takes a bow and stands up, and the audience has been replaced by a wall. And he is in an actual version of the prison set that that he's been acting in.
Are there rules about bowing in the theater context? Because he really goes deep on that bow.
Mm-hmm. It's a sign of deep respect.
It's almost like a yoga-esque fold-over bow. And it made me wonder if that was a little too deep, if that was his problem.
Yeah, there was that, like, thing in the 80s of, like, there was always some Japanese businessmen in something, and, like, the main character has to learn all the, like, signs of respect and, like, you know, the depth of bow is a thing. But I kind of feel like Riker is more of a, like, twirl your hand over your head and bow guy than a, like, deep, sincere, you know, austere bow like this.
I think Data could really put him to shame in the bow department.
Yeah.
Like, totally stick his head up his own butt.
Oh, is Data super flexible, too?
Yeah. How could he not be?
Riker does some great eyes acting here because he bows and looks up and the guy with the suspicious loaf is suddenly in the audience, and you can see the shock and horror wash over him before he goes in for bow number 2, which lands him in actual jail.
He's asking himself the same question we are, which is, why isn't Lieutenant Jay sitting in that seat?
Yeah. Are she on the Picard on the outs again?
I don't know. Sure seems that way.
Yeah. Sad. Well, you know, in this jail cell is talking to a different guy with the weird loaf.
Yeah.
Okay. I found it very hard to tell these different loaf guys apart.
You're a goddamn loaf racist is what you are.
Yeah, they all look the same to me. I will freely admit that this loaf makes all faces look the same.
Maybe they found the key loaf makeup for this episode, the one that makes them all look, like, universally similar.
Because they all have the same hair color and, like, similar face shape, like, sans loaf. They've all got the same kind of, like, jaw shape.
They all have sort of vaguely Peter Fonda hair.
Yeah.
That really, like, lobed back, receding hairline.
Yeah, but they don't have the Peter Fonda teeth, which is why they're not as charming.
Yeah. God, I love those Peter Fonda teeth.
Yeah. The only two loaf people that stand out are the one lady and the one guy that's like a foot taller and 150 pounds heavier than everybody else.
Yeah. The guy with attitude. He's basically the only guy who sticks out to me because of that attitude. He's like a little bit of a jerk prison warden.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like the muscle in this prison.
Yeah, that guy we're talking about is Mavek, who is married to Mimi Leader. Mimi Leader, the television director.
Whoa.
Director of note, especially lately, for her work in my favorite show, The Leftovers.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow. Cool.
Pretty awesome.
Married up.
No kidding. I don't think it's insulting to say. I think he might say that.
As a man who married up, I can...
As someone who played the hit character Mavek in season 6 of Star Trek: The Next Generation.
People are still talking about his work as Mavek.
Really can't wait to pull a natural Mavek out of the cards.
Mm-hmm. On my flight from JFK to LAX, you always see one or two famouses, and I saw this guy signing some headshots when we were at the baggage claim, and the guy was like, "Can you sign it, Mavek?"
Oh. I think, I don't like to spend a lot of time in touristy places, but you walk down Hollywood Boulevard, get your picture taken with your Spider-Man, your Batman, your Mavics.
Yeah.
Very friendly.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, it's always funny to see the kind of broad range of Mavecs. Like, there's the one that definitely got his Mavek loaf at the Halloween store. But
right.
then there's the guy that, like, really takes it seriously and might have ordered the, like, $100 Mavek costume off Amazon.
I also really appreciate the female Mavek.
Yeah.
Because, like, this whole Mavek gender binary thing isn't cool.
Yeah, fuck that.
Anyone can be a Mavek inside.
Yeah. Be the Mavek you want to see in the world. That's what I say.
It is a guiding principle of a Darth Vader base. Have you got find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
There's like this doctor there in this cell, and it's explained to Riker that the Enterprise is a delusion. Like, the real life he remembers is the fantasy life, and the reality is that he is like a violent and insane criminal who is in this facility for his own good.
This, to me, was the best part of this episode because the doctor and everyone around Riker makes a fairly credible case for this.
Yeah. I mean, like, they have a lot of corroborating evidence.
It was scary the first time I saw this episode, and it was scary when I saw it again. Just how tenuous the grasp on reality is for anyone at any time.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same premise as 12 Monkeys. Which plays with this in the same fun way where, like, you know, when you don't have any, like, way to verify the thing you believe is true, like, what do you do? It's also Terminator 2, like, has the same idea in it. Like, she, you know, is institutionalized because she believes that there's a robot from the future. And, like, nobody has any reason to believe that she's right, but she fucking is.
Insane Asylum is a scary place. In the past, in the present, and in the science fiction future. It's universally terrifying. They do that thing where they sort of perp walk Riker to the lunchroom, and it's nothing but like a hallway of screams and people twitching and stuff. It's really bad.
Yeah. That's all sound design, too. Like, yeah. The lunchroom is pretty chill, but the, like, long hallway to it is...
They pan stuff around, too, in a really effective way.
Yeah, the hallway to the lunchroom is Jabba the Hutt's dungeon-level scariness.
Yeah.
And he gets there, and, like, the first person he meets is this lady who is like, yo.
I'm Commander Bloom from the Yorktown.
And she slides a spoon out of her sleeve and like radios up to Starfleet Command to rescue Riker, which is like, man, like that is like the most fun piece of writing because she is clearly off her chain. And
not until that moment, though. It's a tease and reveal. Like, because Riker totally has hope in that moment.
Right. The way it is revealed that she is nuts when she pulls that spoon out is, like, so devastating to him. And so it so underpins the story that the creepy loaf doctor has been telling him.
Yeah.
They call Riker's fantasy world his starship fantasy, which I really like. Chances are Riker's life on the Enterprise is kind of a fantasy.
That's also what I call this show when I tell my wife I'm going to go record it.
I'm going to go do my starship fantasy with my friend Ben.
Yeah. Have fun. Be home for dinner.
Yeah. I embarrassingly forgot a key piece of equipment that we needed to record while we were out here in L.A. when I was packing. So we had to come over here to Max Fun HQ and ask if we could have our Starship Fantasy in their recording booth. Awkward conversation.
Yeah. There's doctors in this facility, and Riker is presented with the option of reflection therapy or lobotomy. And what we find with reflection therapy is a really cool scene where he sat down in a chair and he's presented with figures that he's told are from his imagination.
Yeah, there's this device like on the coffee table in front of him that kind of looks like it was like straight out of Dune.
Mm-hmm.
Like it really has the like Dune aesthetic to it, but it scans his head and then like Picard and Troy and Worf show up and they're like,
"I felt threatened.
I was being watched. Someone must have followed me."
They take on the different aspects of Riker's personality.
Yeah.
Like, Troy pops up first, and she speaks very emotionally about Riker's thoughts the night of, you know, the night of whatever crime he's accused of committing.
Right.
And Worf talks about the aggressive feelings that he felt at that moment, and Picard is sort of the logic center of Riker's brain.
Yeah, I mean, like, the reason he is ostensibly in this jail is that he, like, killed somebody in an incredibly grisly way. Like, Mayvek is, like, telling him about how it took hours to clean all the blood off of him when he came in because he'd, like, mutilated this person's body.
Just getting the blood off your hands took over an hour.
Mayvek kind of laughed about it, too. Like, what is Mayvek's deal?
Mayvek is, like, cranking it in the corner. The idea of this body being cut apart. Jesus, Mayvek, what?
Is Mayvek a guard or an occupant of this place?
But, like, when the doctor tells him about the crime, like, that is, like, the worst, both the worst writing and the worst acting in this episode, because Riker's going, like,
"Leave me alone! No!"
It's such an unmotivated reaction, you know? Like, he is been presented with a lot of plausible evidence that these people are telling him the truth and that he is, in fact, not in his right mind. So why does he believe so firmly that he didn't do that?
Wouldn't a more affecting reaction to that be, like, the dawning realization that a good person has done a very bad thing and that person is him?
Yeah.
What they didn't do was slide the manila envelope full of those awful crime scene pictures across the table. That's a scene you get every time that you don't get here.
Yeah, that'd be nice. That'd be easy to Photoshop, right?
If you're in prison for a murder you aren't sure you committed, don't you have to ask to see those pictures just to be sure?
Yeah, what's your evidence, jerks?
Where's those pics? There's those tasty, tasty stabbing pics.
I had to see them pics. Mayvek is like, some of them are stuck together.
Bad Mayvek.
Mayvek is the worst. Don't let your kids take a picture with him in front of Grohman's Chinese Theater.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't want them anywhere near him.
Keep it to Groot.
Baby Groot, if possible.
this bed inside Riker's prison is maybe the only bed more uncomfortable than Geordi's bed in his quarters. It is like a steel table.
Yeah. Have we seen that triangle pillow somewhere before?
I think we have.
That triangle pillow.
That's a recycled prop.
Yeah. Is that like a Cardassian pillow? Did they give Picard a triangle when he was in that torture chamber?
Is that a Cardassian pillow? Is maybe the most quintessentially greatest gen line we've had in a long time.
Yeah, so
look for the Cardassian pillow in the Max Fun store.
This episode kind of oscillates because, like, he keeps kind of coming back to in ship reality. Like, he's like kind of on the D and in the jail, and, like, you know, every time he turns around, he's in a different place, which is super confusing for him. And so he comes back, and they're like, yeah, like, you have to do the play tonight. And he's like, what? I already did the play.
No!
And the play landed me exactly where I didn't want to be. And sure enough, like, he goes and does it, and in the middle of a scene, like, you know, like, Spooky Loaf Boy is in the audience one more time, and Riker, like, turns around, and, you know, the fourth wall has been replaced by an actual wall.
There's some real Cronenberg vibes here. They do, like, shot, reverse shot of the same person.
Yeah. It's fun. Like, it's got some editing tricks that are pretty cheap to do, but very effective. And I think that the reason they work is that they do so many other parts of the episode are really long takes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they kind of do what Birdman does, which is treat a theater situation as an opportunity for a long take. So Riker's doing, like, minutes of monologue at a time where the camera is, like, is, you know, steady camming around and moving, but it never cuts. And then when it does, it's like, whoa, reality changed completely.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
They give him a ton to do. I don't know if there's another person besides Stu you could load up like this on the show.
Yeah, it made me think, like, I mean, we kind of have got this episode in the Chain of Command arc, but I could not help but think what J.L. Pipes would do with the part that Frakes gets in this episode.
Yeah.
It's funny, he's like, at one point Riker is telling Picard, like, I don't know if I want to do this play, and Picard is like, well, if you don't do it, Beverly is going to come make me do it, so you fucking better do it.
Everyone's so fucking afraid of that doctor.
Yeah, she can. She has a lot of power on the ship.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not going to be in the play? Well, I don't know if you're medically fit to be captain. From a medical standpoint.
I've got a hypo spray full of what may or may not be baby laxative.
my love, he's a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurse the disease. Tell me more, you'll have to go again.
For as good as the editing tricks are, the effects in this episode are not great.
No.
Like the whole video toaster shatter effect, the lady spinning across screen.
Yeah.
The star wipe. There are a lot of ways that they break the reality for Riker that I personally wouldn't have chosen.
The series of bubbles that come up from the bottom of the screen. Oh, is he supposed to be in a fish tank in this part?
The ball bouncing off the frame of the TV, painting the scene below.
Page Peel.
Yeah.
Always a good one.
Yeah. Always a classic.
The ripple where the computer isn't smart enough to replace the pixels on the edge, so you see a little, like, black on the edges where it's rippling.
One of them is just a blue screen. But in describing all of those things, I think Riker's faltering sanity is legitimately scary. And those moments, I feel like, are ruined by the shatter effect, for example.
Yeah. During the reflection therapy scene, and when the characters start, like, inveighing against the doctors and the facility, when Picard and Worf and Troi are begging Riker to shut it down and, like, stop believing them and come back to himself, you know, he does that thing where he, like, tells them to take a long walk and is, you know, like looking back up at the doctor for looks of approval.
You've taken a big step today.
Once that goes down, it seems like the episode kind of speeds up because the next thing that happens is Data and Worf come like extraction squad style in the middle of the night and like are doing the bust him out of prison. But he is like so like deep into the reality of I believe myself to be a murdering insane man who has imagined all these Starfleet people that he rats him out.
You know how some athletes have like lucky socks or a lucky sweatband or whatever? Worf has worn this black leotard on three totally failed missions. He's got to change that leotard, man.
Yeah. I was just thinking about like how unstoppable Data and Worf would be as an extraction squad. Like one of them can open doors, the other one can't.
We haven't seen Data throw someone across a shuttle bay in a long time.
Yeah.
And then this scene, we get a little bit of a tease for that. Like, he grabs a guy and throws him against the wall.
Data doing some violence is really fun.
Yeah.
But Riker, like, you know, makes a commotion and gets the bad guy's attention. And they, like, Mayvek and his little lackey, his little Roman Polanski buddy come out and they fight Worf and Data. They get tossed. And they eventually get Riker to the like beam out point, right? And they've got the jumbo Crayolas set up to get him out. And he wakes up in Six Bay getting scanned, and it's like it's again unreality because they keep like fixing a cut on the side of his head. That's where the knife was.
It's bleeding again. Why, you just healed it.
He is so angsty at all times in this scene. Like, he is so frustrated by this wound healing process.
I thought Patrick Stewart's performance throughout this episode was really interesting because he's so a tertiary character in the story. Like, he really doesn't drive the story that much, but he's there to serve as a symbol of like the like rock that is Riker's reality. And when he's there and that's ineffective, it's so upsetting.
Yeah.
Like when Frakes repudiates him during the reflection therapy scene, it's like, fuck, like this is bad news bears, man.
Yeah.
And you get a little of that in this Six Bay scene. And it winds up with Riker like throwing haymakers and like punching Worf and shit.
Not a good look in the workplace.
No. He gets a dustbuster.
What are you doing, Will?
And he's like, what I'm going to do is I'm going to point it at me. And they're like, dude, don't dustbust yourself.
We'll just give you a lint roller, man. It'll be fine. Yeah. You don't have to do that.
Yeah. Worf is like, I'll adopt your cat if that's what it takes, but don't.
I've got this duct tape I can wrap around my hand backwards and then just sort of get the lint off of you that way.
But I'm going to find out what's real and what's not.
Will, don't do it.
He blasts himself and he's back in the prison, and the doctor and Mayvek and the other guy, Sulak? Is that the guy's name?
Sure.
The administrator who is the...
You can't tell these people apart, Ben.
Yeah.
Why do you even try?
Indistinguishable from the guy who is the doctor, in my opinion. They're all there.
The handmaiden's loaf people.
Yeah. And he starts, like, phasering everybody and everything. And, like, the more phasering he does, the more shattering and the more, like, the wall disappears and the audience is there giving him a standing ovation for all the great phasering. Eventually he wakes up and he's in like a different place. He's not on the ship and he's not in the prison. He's in this like creepy science lab. It's kind of the Schism's science lab. Like Riker got schismed again. You just got schismed too. Secret of the Ooze. And he's got schism juice going into his head.
Yeah.
There's like an IV going into the part of the temple that he keeps getting cut.
The fatal flaw that all schismers do is they never strap down their patient.
Yeah.
You're just going to get yourself out of that schism if you're not strapped down.
Yeah, and they're always facing away from the patient, too. Like, the computers and shit are all, like, facing the other direction, so they're kind of caught off guard. Like, by the time they realize he's becoming unschismed, he's, like, up and ready to kick their butts.
I love that Riker sees a giant knife on the table across the room.
Yeah.
Like, a knife that has no business in an operating or medical environment.
You got to put that in an evidence locker.
Yeah. Riker's like, well, I see no means for escape except for that giant machete.
So he gets that giant machete, but he also gets the pendant that is a radio that should be the way all other communicators are, a way of finding him.
Yeah.
He radios up to the entrepreneur and says, get me out of here. And he beams up. And the button of the episode is like a scene with him and Troy and Picard in the ready room. And they're kind of like, you know, wrapping everything up. You know, it turns out he did go on his covert mission but went missing 2 days into it. It turns out he did get tortured, and it was like a deep psychological torture, and the kind of bouncing back and forth between the ship and the reality of the play that he was in was his mind building a defense mechanism against insanity. Maybe Frakes' weirdest performance in the episode is like him basically going like, and it is fucking awesome that I didn't go crazy.
Riker's like, in a pinch, I've gotten my mind to do all sorts of things to keep me in the game.
We don't even have baseball here in the future.
Yeah.
I know a lot about baseball, believe me.
My mind conjured baseball on its own.
And I invented something called baseball, and then I went on Wikipedia, and it turns out it actually existed. Long time ago.
I don't know who Margaret Thatcher is, but thinking of her naked on a cold day really keeps me in the game.
And then he goes down to the set of the play, and the doctor's like, hey, you know, like, we were going to do this, me and the stage crew, we were going to do this tomorrow morning. And he's like, I just got to see this through, doc. And so he ends the episode, like, starting to rip the scenic design of the set apart.
I think that Riker needs more time to recover from this. This whole situation really fucked him up.
Now, if you've lost your grip on reality, you're going to want to destroy the one symbol on the ship that can bring you back to the horror that you've been living through.
Now, when you grab a piece of metal sheeting, you're going to want to use some OSHA-approved leather gloves.
This pair of gloves has been impregnated with a nice thick latex rubber that can protect your hands from any cuts or gashes.
I love how little they show you of this. Like, he grabs a corner of sheeting, and then you get like a half a second of pull.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like fade out.
Yeah.
Fade out credits.
I am the cutest of all.
Did you like this episode?
I did. It is not a mountain ep for me because of the couple of times where it just kind of loses its grip. And
oh, I see what you did there. Its grip on reality?
Its grip on what it's trying to do.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I'm biased. I have taken an acting class or two, Adam, and when I was in college, I took an acting class in which I had to prepare a series of monologues over the course of the semester. And one of the ones I did was the Brad Pitt monologue from 12 Monkeys. Mm-hmm. And when I finished my scene, before like I could get feedback from the class or anything, my professor, who is this kind of like sophisticated, skinny little Manhattan lady, just said to me, well, I didn't like that very much, but I didn't think Brad Pitt was very good in that part either. and is like one of the most withering, like she just fucking destroyed me in that moment. Like, I was like, I'll never act again.
That was when you changed your major.
Yeah. I strongly considered a career in, I was like, man, maybe I should become an electrician or something.
She could have stopped your podcast career before it started.
Yeah. Blew up on the launch pad.
She seems nice.
Yeah, she did not have a lot of respect for me, which maybe I didn't deserve. I had not done nothing to earn her respect.
So. I understand.
Yeah. But yeah, like I guess maybe that made me especially sensitive to this being, you know, like if you're going to do Shock Corridor in space, like you want to fucking destroyify it. Like you really want to nail the, and they do so much of the time. Like there's so much of the time where you're like, wow, what if this is an episode where we find out that Riker has been imagining all of this shit all along? Like, what does that reality look like after that? Like, is there a Federation or did he imagine that whole thing? Like, what's the deal?
It would have been a really interesting way to kill off a character. Yeah. And by that, I mean not actually kill them, but like, you know, Frakes isn't on the show anymore.
Right.
Style.
Yeah. You know, not that I want to see Frakes off the show, but like the when it's working, this episode is working. And a couple of times it feels like really take the air out of it for me.
Mental illness is the most scary thing to me. And so the underpinning of that story I found like totally affecting.
Mm-hmm.
And Frakes' performance as someone who is losing his grasp on that, I thought was really strong.
Yeah.
The effects did not help because there didn't need to be any. Like, Frakes was the effect.
Yeah.
And that's all that you needed. Much like Picard's terrible experience murdering millions of Federation people, I wish there was a greater consequence for him in the episodes ahead. Like, I know next week he's going to go right back to work, but there's no way that he should be able to do that.
Right, that he should be stable enough. I mean, it's the same thing with Picard getting tortured, too.
Yeah.
Or Geordi being turned into a Manchurian candidate by the Romulans.
Hey Ben, let's play a little game called Who Was Worst Tortured? It's everyone's favorite game. Was it Picard by the Cardassians, or was it Riker by these loaf people?
What about Geordi? Geordi got tortured too. You're not counting him.
I'm not. I feel like his torture was in a solid third place. Third place torture, Geordi.
Wow.
I think what I'm trying to say is I think Riker had it worse than Picard.
Yes.
Because mental torture, to me, as a torture connoisseur, gotta go with mental on top.
Yeah. You're like, Mayvok, beating off to gore and violence is so pedestrian. I beat off to taut psychological torture.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a psychological aspect to Picard's torture, but he didn't completely get unhinged.
The psychological torture that Picard went through was fear factor when he had to eat the live egg.
Yeah. Or what about, I mean, like the fact
any
that...
Any torture that Joe Rogan could dispense is not the deepest form of torture, I would say.
I don't know. Have you heard his podcast? Oh! I actually haven't heard his podcast.
How dare you?
I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it's a great way to learn about space aliens being real and taking baths in sensory deprivation chambers.
Hey, don't knock sensory deprivation baths until you try it, bub.
All right. Well, I'm looking for my opportunity. One has not presented itself. Adam, do you want to move on to a bit of business?
Priority one message business?
P1 message business.
All right.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Hey, Ben, our first priority one message is of a commercial nature.
Oh, I love commercials.
Feels like we've been getting more and more of these commercial messages, Ben.
Yeah,
isn't that great?
People are getting on the old commercial message bandwagon.
Plenty of room on Team Commercial Message. Message goes like this. Introducing Plavim.
Oh, no. What?
A new topical ointment for your nastiest skin afflictions. Ever wake up with a weird rash after a night in a terrible Fort Lauderdale strip club?
Oh, no.
Don't bother with conventional drugstore creams. They aren't going to touch that. Don't cream it. Plavim it. Plavim contains a lot of DEET, so you'll be protected from mosquitoes that spread Zika. Plavim also contains 10% no, you fuck yourself. Plavim has no medically or socially redeeming qualities whatsoever. That message, of course, from Plavim, a wholly owned subsidiary of Raz.
Wow, Raz has not. I think that's the first fire back that Raz has done.
That was a strong fire.
That was pretty devastating.
Yeah,
I don't know what's happening to our show, but I love it.
Warping a commercial message for their private use.
Our next message here is of a personal nature. It's from Lauren, and it is to the other senders of P1s. It goes like this. High five. Thanks for supporting the podcast. The best podcast. I love you all so much. I love Ben and Adam so much, too. I may be drunk on Guinan's good green stuff. Lauren sounds fun. I want to drink green stuff with Lauren.
Yeah. Lauren's real.
Yeah.
Guinan is a television character.
I also like that Lauren is just like an earnest supporter and not a Raz and Plavim type who is really just out here to turn the show into something about themselves.
Yeah. Lauren's a giver.
Well, yeah.
You know what Raz and Plavim give? A lot of guff to each other.
To each other. On our air.
Yeah.
I mean, it's helping support the show, so I can't fully condemn it, but I like Lauren.
I fully encourage it. If any of our viewers would like to send either a commercial or personal priority one message, they can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are for $200, and they help us with the ongoing production of our show. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Real or imagined, did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
What's the guy's name, the bad guy? Sulak?
Yeah.
No!
Something like that. It'd be nice if we had any research on this episode.
The guy who does the Shimoda graphs will have to do the research.
Yeah, Colin. That guy is my Shimoda, I think, because that last scene where Riker wakes up, he's doing some evil shit, and he just gets caught with his pants down. Like, it is such a... It's such a bonehead move that he's been inserting himself into Riker's reality, like via an IV drip into the brain, and Riker has been like awake and like squirming around on this table for like a solid minute before he goes like, he's conscious. What? And then like Riker is seriously incapacitated. This guy, yeah, like he did a lot of terrible planning with not strapping Riker down, not preventing a large knife from being present in the room with prisoner guy, not keeping the communicator out of the room also. Like, wouldn't you want to separate the communicator from the prisoner, like, first thing?
Picard paints the picture of these guys early on in the episode as being extremely dangerous and skilled in torture. Here's the thing, not good at torture. Not good at setting up a surgical ward.
Yeah.
Hmm.
How about yourself? Did you have a Shimoda?
We teased my Shimoda early on. The scene where Troy tells Riker in the denouement that, the only thing that kept you sane was that sweet, sweet mind keeping you grounded, conjuring imagery that kept you in the game. And, like, seeing Riker in profile kind of lean back in the couch, squint his eyes and be like,
All right.
It me. Was like, that's the self-satisfied Riker that we know and love. That's how we know he's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Like, the consequences are not going to be permanent for him. He's not going to go cry in a vineyard.
No.
He's going to get right back on the Riker horse.
Those bullets bounce right off Riker's chest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
Personal grooming is less about something I do for myself, even though there are myriad reasons for that, and more about my consideration for other people who have to look at me, be around me, and on special occasions, love me physically. And when it's clear my front and back yards are becoming overgrown and unsightly, I'll break out the mower, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra from Manscaped. This Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is really something else. This trimmer features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Listen, spring cleaning doesn't just apply to your nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants, right? We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that. Being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment. No comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one size fits all on a social media platform. Or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
It's a good question, Adam. And I'm going to find out.
I believe we're going to talk about Season 6, Episode 22, Suspicions.
A pioneering Ferengi scientist is found dead, and Beverly risks her career to prove he was murdered. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
I remember it in that way that we have been told constantly that there are Beverly Crusher road mine episodes from here on out. Like, as we drive down this road of Next Generation, like, there's a triangular orange sign that's like Beverly ahead, like slow.
And it just shows Beverly's face tumbling down from the side of a cliff.
Watch for Beverly. Yeah, and so I feel like it's going to be one of those, but I don't remember this episode specifically, no.
I remember it being one of those ones that is like, hey, what about... Like, you know, the Ferengis and the Klingons have technology, so they must have scientists. What does that look like? And it just being like, You didn't really sell me on this is what that looks like.
Now, we all know that the Ferengi are terrible with technology, but what this episode presupposes is maybe they're not.
Well, that's what we'll be watching next time because we have no vetoes.
It's a deal.
Adam, you know what else is a deal? Is the low, low price that you can pay to support The Greatest Generation on an ongoing basis by going to MaximumFun.org/donate.
It's true, Ben. The support of our viewers for this show is the thing that keeps this wobbly contraption on the road towards Beverlyville. The hills of Beverly. It's a real jalopy.
I'm trying to think of any lyrics from the song, the Beverly Hillbillies song, but I can't, so we'll just move on.
Bubbling crude.
Speaking of songs, we should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusa for all of our other music, and we should encourage people to go online. Go to Twitter and use the hashtag GreatestGen. Adam is at Cut for Time. I'm at Benjamin R. AATR. We have a great Facebook group. There's also a lively Reddit group and Greatest Gen both. And if you are confused by anything that has happened here today, surely your solutions can be found at greatestgen.wikia.com.
If you'd like anything that we've said on our show on your body, get a number of t-shirts available at the MaxFun store.
Yeah, and with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and an episode of The Greatest Generation that really shows the broad spectrum of loaf that is available in this universe.
Make it so.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.